Once again, Weta just wows.
Well, thank you.
I mean, this is... And the fact that your name is in the opening titles.
Yeah, that's always nice. It is, yeah. Well, closing titles, but yeah, it's in the...
Yeah. Yeah, it's not in the crawl. It's...
Yeah. I think I had that on the first one, too. Yeah.
But it's rare when you guys get that kind of recognition.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, obviously, Jim and John realized that that was a big part of this film was the...
You don't have Avatar without Weta.
Yeah, we like to think so. You know, I mean, it's we're pretty well working together, you know, with Lightstorm. Like, after we finished the first film, I don't know, about 6 months later when we got back from everything, Jim said, let's sit down and talk about what we can do better next time. So we knew there was going to be a next time.
Always
we just
good.
Exactly. We just didn't know when.
Oh.
But what we talked about is really we needed closer collaboration between the two teams. And that's what we did. Like, we've been writing software for this ever since we finished the last film. So we really haven't stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how much has technology... Well, I know how much technology has changed in these intervening years.
Yeah.
But how did the change in technology help you and your team really up the ante? I mean, I have to tell you, my attorney went with me to the screening.
Uh-huh.
He swore it was shot totally underwater in a South Pacific blue sea.
Yeah.
I said, water tanks and VFX. He goes, no. He was just amazed and mesmerized. And I said, that's Joe and his team at Weta.
Yeah. And the technology, it's not that the technology evolved. It's like we wrote it. Because we had to, right? You know what I mean? That's like, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? And we just, like I said, started writing technology for, you know. Again, it was us and Lightstorm. Like, all the capture side of it, you know, that was Lightstorm and the team there. For the virtual stage, it was a combination of the two. And then for the finished effects, it was, you know, software that we wrote. But it kind of had to flow through all the way.
Just like water.
Just like water. Yeah. I see a theme here.
You know, one of the great things, because when we talked before, we talked about War for Planet of the Apes. It was the last time you and I talked. I've talked to, I don't know how many of you guys, though, in between on MCU stuff.
No.
But one of the great things that we talked about then was the expressiveness of the eyes. You take that to a whole new level here with, you know, the way of water. And I'm really curious because I didn't think you could get any better with emotion in eyes as you did in Apes. You have surpassed that.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah.
How do you even improve upon perfection?
We kind of hit a limit with the tools that we had with, you know, that we used, like basically starting with Gollum and carried through to Apes and then Alita. It was a good system, but really difficult to hit that kind of expressiveness and hard to go beyond. So we basically just rethought about, okay, when an actor makes an expression, when any of us makes an expression, what's really going on? What's muscles driving all of this? And we knew that, but you had no way to actually know what the muscles were doing. We always just guessed and gave them numbers and tried to combine them in a way that worked. It was a lot of give and take to do that. This time we actually used a little bit of deep learning. We wrote a neural network to actually understand what the muscles were doing. And that gave us like a way to like not just look at a piece by piece kind of thing, but to look at the expressiveness of the whole face. So it's subtle things, but like, you know, when you move your lips, the skin around your eyes is still moving. We used to have to kind of look at that and try to dial a little bit of it in without breaking anything else. Like I said, it always took a lot of time. Now with this new system, we start to get these sort of sympathetic behaviors just coming out. So you can work on the primary expression, and a lot of the secondary motion comes along with it. And that adds a subtlety that was always really hard to achieve before. And I think that's what you're seeing mostly around the eyes.
It's amazing, particularly with Kiri.
Mm-hmm.
It really stands out and is noticeable with her. And it's because of her eyes are so much bigger, almost like very akin to like the Big Eyes paintings.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But also, it's because she's a 14-year-old girl, right?
Yes.
She doesn't really speak that much. A lot of it is just in the face. And we all know that expression.
Yes. It's like when everybody's worried about Carrie, and it's like, no, she's 14.
Yeah, exactly.
As I'm watching the film, no, she's just 14.
Exactly.
And there were a couple chuckles.
Yeah.
In the screening, because I was screening it at the same time as the premiere, but not at the premiere. And, there were some parental chuckles.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
That happened. But that, in particular, that really showcased the escalation in the technology that you've written. Just outstanding.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
I mean, that adds... Because the story itself, it's not a groundbreaking story. It's a story we're all familiar with in any setting. This just happens to be on Pandora.
Well, that's every film that we do, if you think about it. Like, that's what we hope visual effects brings to it. You know, like, you go back to Planet of the Apes. Caesar was a coming-of-age story, right? But what makes it unique so that you can see things in a way you hadn't seen it before is we're telling it through the eyes of an ape. Rather than a human. And here we're looking at a Pandoran family, you know, that has to go off and basically, you know, emigrate to another part of the world and try to adapt and try to settle in. And so, yeah, you try to take those things and, you know, give them a grounding in something that we understand, but then make them a little bit bigger and a little bit more expressive so that there's something that as an audience you're drawn to.
Well, and of course, you have this great differentiation between Kiri's family, Sully's family that we know, and now we have another family. And the differential in the design of the faces, the nose, and the eyes.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, looking at that, I never would have known it was Kate Winslet and Cliff Curtis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Never would have known it.
Yeah.
It just flabbergasted me. But to create that distinction and still have as much emotion coming from that family as from the Sully family was just amazing. Amazing.
And it was great for us because we got to broaden our tools a little bit. Yeah, again, in service of the story.
Right.
Yeah, it's that new facial structure. It's also the skin color slightly different. And, you know, they make a point over and over again about how they're built for swimming, the other kids are not. It's, you know, kind of a fish out of water story, but again, it's more like learning to adapt, okay? We're in a new place and we're not built for this. How do we do it?
You know? It's very much like a U.S. gentrification or refugee situation in the world.
It could be, you know, anything, you know, like that. Yeah, just having to find your place and making it fit. Like, I love the scene where the kids are tormenting Kiri because she's just sort of lost in thought about all the waves and the light and the sand, you know, and the brothers step in and just...
Wail
just
on.
Go at it. Yeah. It's like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Every sister should have brothers like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But now you bring up another exquisite part of this film, the waves, the water. I know that Jim was using the virtual camera while he was filming.
Yes, yeah.
But then you have to take what he's theoretically seeing.
Yeah.
And you have to really bring it to life. And make it a picture.
Yep, yep.
This is relatively new, this process.
Yeah, because what we did is we wrote the software to generate the water, and we did essentially a low-res and a high-res version of it. So the low-res version would play in real time. So Jim could call out the kind of water he was looking for. I want to, you know... a 2-meter swell here, or I want, you know, something more calm and mirror-like here. And then the crew at Lightstorm had a lot of these things that they could dial in, and then that's what Jim did his virtual camera on. And then we took those and you know, used those as the starting point. It's not as simple as just saying, okay, now we go low-res to high-res because it's water. You're running a simulation. But it still made sure we were all grounded in the same world, that we weren't cheating, you know, the physics. Where that got complicated, obviously, was doing that on top of what had been shot in the performance capture tank. Because you got a tank full of water with these big paddles going on that don't really behave like ocean waves, but the performances are reacting to them.
Right.
So we had to do a little bit of extra work to blend that all together. But that was in the cards from the beginning, that we needed some way for Jim to visualize this.
Yeah. Well, and nobody knows water better than Jim Cameron.
Absolutely.
He knows water better than anyone on the planet, I think. He's seen more of it than anyone on the planet.
He really has, because we would do a lot of, okay, the physics are telling us, you know, this is what we should get, and Jim is telling us, well, you're wrong, you know. I've seen it, and this is what it should be.
It's he's been to the bottom of the Mariana Trench.
Yeah.
Nobody else has.
No.
But Jim Cameron has.
Yep.
But it just amazes me. And I know Weta made great strides with water and ocean in Eternals. Huge. Those ocean scenes, spectacular, with the current. And I'm seeing much of that here as well, especially when we get out near the Three Brothers, the Rocks formation.
Yeah.
And really seeing the current take hold. But even in the shallow end by the village. You can see it within the texture of the turquoise to the blue.
Yes.
And I love the color gradation in there because it also mirrors the two peoples.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, you know? Yeah.
So it all comes together within the water itself. But I love how we can see the current above and below.
Yep, and also we played with things like, you know, sandbanks under the water to help give you different variations in color. Just things that we observed out in the real world. But yeah, you're right to pick up on that because we actually did use that a little bit. Like if you're looking behind cliff, you might see a little bit more like shallow, you know, greener water. If you're looking the other direction from where they came from, the water's deeper
and
bluer, and it kind of plays with them, but it also kind of plays with where they're coming from and where they're going.
No, just in the sandbars, you've got, there's a great scene there where Kiri is just face down, just under the surface, and we see the sandbars.
Yeah.
And how the little dots of like a crab underneath is breathing. And because I always thought when I'd be down at the Jersey Shore with my grandparents, for me, at the ocean, that was the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah,
and then
you'd
start digging for a crab when you saw the air bubble come up.
Yeah, yeah.
And just the incorporation of real life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really looked like we were in a coral reef.
Well, I mean, everything we do is based on something that exists in this world. You know, so we just try to put it together in ways that are unique and try to draw a little bit of magic out of it. But like you said, it's there. If you go to the Jersey Shore, it's still there.
It's still there.
Yeah.
Now, did you get any field trips out of this one?
Nope.
Oh, come on, Joe.
Jim took the team out and, you know, did some, you know, diving tests. We're visual effects. We don't do that. We stay and figure it out. Yeah.
Darn.
Yeah.
Oh, no, well, this wasn't really a global field trip. Like Eternals was a global field trip.
Yeah.
This was not. I'm really curious about the photoreal characters and their movement in the water. Because I know that crew and cast, when they were in the tanks, no scuba gear, they're all basically doing a modified free dive in there.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
You know, how does that impact the visual effects when you then have to incorporate emotion and the whole body and the movement of tails?
Yeah.
Because that has to be a real challenge in and of itself because you're battling with water first and the scenery around it.
But you've got a great starting point. You know, having the actors perform in the water, you get all the benefits of capturing that motion, right? It's what we've learned a long time ago. When you're doing performance capture for like a body, you get the weight right when something is running or jumping. And it's the same thing when a character is floating or swimming. That would take a really long time to try to animate. And to try to do a whole movie's worth of animation that way would be really hard. Like by the time you put enough reference cameras in the water to really understand what the actors are doing, you might as well build a capture system because you're you're that close to doing it anyway. So that's why we did it. It just made more sense to just capture it directly. And then you start to develop a vocabulary, like when they're swimming, okay, in the tank, you're a human, you can't really propel yourself as fast as, you know, the Metchalina can with their big tails. So we just take, you know, the strokes that they're doing, add the tail movement, add that little bit of propulsion, and then just blend it in so it still makes sense, you know, with how they're swimming. But they're swimming in a way that they can do, which is much beyond what humans can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the face, we couldn't really capture underwater. They had a head rig most of the time with like a GoPro on it. But because they were working so much in the water, they had to wear goggles, they had to wear nose clips, you know. So you're not really getting the expression. So what Jim would do, I mean, you get a clue, but you don't get the detail. So what Jim would do is have them pop up and put on one of our stereo head rigs and perform the scene, you know, again, so that we got, you know, a sense of their performance. But of course, that never matches up one-to-one. It was
right.
Like, okay, now we've got this body motion, and we've got this head motion. Which one is the lead here for this part of the story? You know, is it the face leading the body, or is the body leading the face? So always had to work that out to figure out which was most important in how to kind of combine the two performances. And that's where the animators pretty much had a field day trying to do that stuff.
Well, and then you've got the fish, you've got the undersea
mm-hmm.
life that
yeah.
comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many instances where they're going opposite to what the characters are doing.
Yes, yeah.
But you still have to capture that fluidity of how they move
mm-hmm.
in the water.
Yeah, yeah.
And then fish, the various kinds of
mm-hmm.
fish, and the incredible
mm.
Tacuna.
Mm-hmm.
I am so in love with that creature.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
all of that,
mm-hmm.
and you've got things moving in different directions at all times.
Mm-hmm.
But everything has to be either intuitive or counterintuitive to the water.
Well, there's still a current.
Right.
You know, we take what the water simulation is doing, and you know, in any ocean, if you look at what the waves are doing, you can kind of figure out what the current is doing underneath. Not the current, but essentially the effect that the wave has underneath it, which gives you a local current, not a big, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, Gulf current kind of
yeah.
thing. And so that's what we use. That everything had to react to that current, including the camera, right? The camera had, you know, the camera operator had to be carried along by the same current. And so, yeah, the fish, the plants, they're all reacting to that in some way, but then they're adding their own motion on top of it.
Yeah. And I just found that so striking because some can be going this way, some can be going that way.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody has been swimming by
mm-hmm.
and caused a disruption.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that happening.
There is, to the plants, to the bubbles, causing fish to scatter. Yes, exactly, yeah. Yeah, we studied a lot of that early on just to break down how various things like that would happen, different kinds of fish that are built different ways, you know, how they would move. Like, you know, even the tulkun, they're based on a whale, but we wanted them to be more expressive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they've got movable heads. Like, we took a little bit of, like, seal personality, you know, into it. And we gave them the ability to kind of bend their fins down, you know,
right.
so that they can swim, you know, multiple different ways, not just only as a whale would swim. You know, we wanted to give them a little bit more freedom to do these things.
And, of course, the eyes are just
mm-hmm.
to die for.
Yeah, like,
you just...
especially for Piacon, and also, I guess, the scene, you know, with Roa are the two, you know, main ones, the female. The creatures are so big that all that interaction came down to the character and the eye.
Mm-hmm.
That, well, the little eye next to it, but really it was the big eye. You're reacting to. And that was it. It was the soft tissue around the eyes mostly we had to work with. Like, we couldn't even get them to crack a smile, right? There was no lips or anything.
Right.
So it all had to be just in that eye.
And it even looked like there was almost like a clear plasma coating over the eye,
mm-hmm.
protecting it.
There was. A lot of underwater sea creatures have they have the thing called the nictitating membrane, which you see coming and going. Birds have that too, and some sea creatures have. So actually, our Metchalina had that as well. You see them;
mm-hmm.
it does that sideways blink. We have them too; they just don't work anymore.
Yeah. What can we say? We have devolved.
Yeah.
We have devolved.
Yeah.
Another interesting part of this one are the battle sequences.
Mm-hmm.
Now, were you guys also doing the battle sequences?
Yeah, we did the whole movie except for ILM took on the sequence with the where they first land, where the rocket ships okay. land, and they kind of blast over the forest.
Yeah, let them do yeah. something.
We just ran out of time. We had too much character stuff, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and but I have to say, the battle sequences are just amazing. Because mm-hmm. here, you've got so many different things. You've got human characters. Mm-hmm. You've got face masks mm-hmm. on the human characters because they can't breathe the air.
Yeah.
You've
yeah.
got the mutants, mm-hmm. soldiers turned, whatever mm-hmm. they have yeah. been turned into.
Yeah.
And then you've got the ship. And mm-hmm. I want to know how many times you guys had to look at Titanic for the we're scaling up in the Jack and Rose moment. Get to the top.
Yeah. Actually, not too much, really, because Jim had it, because Jim does this template shoot, he had what he wanted,
oh
you know,
God.
So we just worked from that, you know, probably looked at the abyss a little bit more for the being trapped under the water,
uh-huh.
you know, those moments. Actually, we looked at Titanic for the below deck stuff, but not so much the big, you know, flipping over. That was just completely choreographed from what Jim wanted for this film.
Because I saw yeah. that, and it was just, you know, it's tipping. We got to get climb to the yeah, top, and yeah. you're climbing to the
yeah,
top.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it turns over
yeah.
a la Poseidon Adventure,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, okay, you
yeah.
know.
Well, it's a big ticking clock, right? It's
yeah.
just doing this, and or, you know, like that, and that's...
It was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And but the below deck stuff, especially yeah. when everyone was trapped,
mm-hmm.
you really do a lot of navigating and shifting
mm-hmm.
because you're partially in air,
mm-hmm.
you're underwater,
mm-hmm.
but the water is steadily rising.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to bring in light.
Yes. Yeah.
With the sea creatures.
Yes, exactly.
The Kiri
yeah.
controls.
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah.
That had to be one of the most beautiful elements of the film.
It was obviously an idea that Jim had early on, and it just really was nice because it shows her kind of empathy for this world that she knew nothing about, but somehow she has a connection to it that's stronger than anyone else's, even though she doesn't know how or why,
mm-hmm.
but she's able to call on it when there's this emergency, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that just... And the way that negative space comes into play
mm-hmm.
around that,
mm-hmm.
so that really stands out because we're so used to seeing beautiful blues
mm-hmm.
in the water, and now it's murky and it's got oil and all kinds of crap in it.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
And then to have that light
mm-hmm.
and have that whole trail take us through
mm-hmm.
the whole lower deck.
Yeah, yeah.
Just outstanding, Joe. Mm. Outstanding.
Yeah.
An interesting part of this one also is the costuming and how the costuming of the characters reacts in water.
Mm-hmm.
Especially some of the heavier jewelry.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, Deb Scott, who was the costume designer, she worked with Weta Workshop, and they built a lot of those costumes to human scale because they're so intricately designed,
yeah.
you know, with the weaving and the textures, and like I said, the jewelry, the stones, you know, all of it. So they built it and did a lot of underwater tests. And then we used those designs and then rebuilt them in the computer. But obviously we had to change things because they, you know, the Na'vi proportions are different than a human proportion. So you couldn't use the construction, the patterns one-to-one. But it really informed a lot of what we did. So we could, you know, look at how they were being done in the pool and see the motion and make sure that when we simulated ours, it at least had a similar feel. Same thing with the hair, right? Because
mm-hmm.
you've got, you know, Kiri's got free-flowing hair. A lot of the rest of them have, you know, braids or dreads. That reacts differently in water because
very
you're binding
so.
The hair differently. So, yeah, we had to kind of get all that stuff working together.
Because, and I found that really interesting watching, because number one, all the costuming, it's not sewn. It's all natural elements
mm-hmm.
that are tied, that are braided,
yes. mm-hmm.
that are woven like a basket.
Exactly, yeah.
And all are made of natural. You could look at it and
mm-hmm.
tell.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, there are shells, there's natural stone.
Yes.
you know, the hemp or, you know, from leaves and trees and bark.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really impressed with that. But I also noticed for some of the really heavy jewelry and the stones, and having been known to go into the water wearing heavy pieces like that, they really don't move.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
And that really impressed me. That some of these heavy pieces, they weren't moving. They moved just a little bit.
Yeah, because we wanted to always just keep it alive just so people were reminded they're in water, because most people don't have that experience, so they expect a little bit of movement. So we just tried to walk that line of, you know, you know you're in water, but this is a heavy piece.
Yeah, right? That's why it just moves a little.
Yeah, yeah.
But the weight of it is not letting it free flow.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
And that blew my mind that you guys nailed it to that minutia. Well, I expect that from Webb. But, you know, you left no stone unturned with this film. You know, what would you say was the most challenging aspect?
The faces. Always the faces.
The faces?
Yeah. I mean, technically, the water was really hard. But, you know, your story lives and dies on your characters. So it's all about the faces. It's all about the eyes. Yeah, that's really what you have to make work. Yeah.
How much of an emotional transference or change did these characters, from your standpoint, undergo from Avatar 1 to The Way of Water?
Well, I guess the first thing was, you know, for Jake and Neytiri primarily, the aging.
Right.
They're older. I mean, like even Jake's model, we called it dad bod, right? He just had to have that realism of having raised a family and being 15 years older. Zoe we treated a little bit more gently, you know, but it was still in their faces, and that's what we really wanted to you know, have come through. And then, you know, all the detail, the motion, like we were talking about before with our new facial system, but that was our starting point. You know, if you really had a family 15 years later, and, you know, from growing up in this jungle, what would it be like? They've got a few more nicks and scratches and cuts because, you know,
you're in the jungle.
You're in the jungle, yeah. So that was our starting point. Yeah.
Wow. Now, how closely on a film like this one were you working with your cinematographer, with Russell?
With Russell, very closely. We did a lot of tests early on to figure out what we wanted the lighting to be. Mm-hmm. So part of the whole, you know, virtual production thing that Jim does, he likes to block in the lighting for the shots because it helps, you know, inform the composition in the camera. And on film one, that was very crude. On this film, we wrote the software for the virtual camera that would do the lighting so that we could get as close as we could in real time on stage to what the final is going to look like. So there was some kind of, you know, parody with the technology we were using. And so we used that, and we used, you know, film one as a guide. And then Russell went in and started doing lighting tests, and we saw what he was able to hit physically. And then we modified some of what we were doing to, you know, to try to follow his lead. So it was kind of an iterative process. We kind of, you know, fed off of each other. But we made sure, you know, all the color spaces for the cameras and everything were consistent all across the board. And then, you know, ultimately, Russell is working to the same templates that we work from for an all-CG shot, you know, a live-action shot. Jim will still have done a template for it on the performance capture stage, so he'll have some idea of what he wants that to look like, whether it's, you know, on the ship's deck or if it's, you know, in the tank. A lot of that, you know, he's got, like, in his mind what that's supposed to be. So, yeah, we work pretty closely with Russell on all of that.
You know, how big, because I know refraction and reflection has always been the bane of existence for animators with VFX.
Yes.
How much advancement, because it looks exquisite here, how much advancement it was brought into The Way of Water in terms of incorporating that refraction and reflection? Because you really see that with sunlight through the water, It disperses
yes.
differently than sunlight coming through a gauzy drapery.
Absolutely. And actually, one of the tricks is that the way that happens in the water is exactly the way it happens in your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So, because your eyes are filled with water, right? So we were actually killing two birds with one stone. Then, yeah, so that was a lot of the software, our new renderer that we wrote, Manuka, handled that aspect of it, you know, for us. And we've had Manuka in production now since, I think, the third Hobbit film. So we've been building
yeah.
on, you know, on that. And it's a great tool to have. And also just, you know, knowing this was coming and being able to do all the absorption in the water and you know, everything else. But the other trick is it's difficult to calculate because it just requires so many more calculations to have light going in and out of water.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing you can do there is just throw more computers at it. And so that's what we did. We threw a lot of computers at the whole thing. The
wow.
water rendering was huge. Like the simulation times were really big, but then rendering all that water was really big. So we maxed out what we could do, you know, in New Zealand because of COVID, there were supply chain issues. We couldn't actually get more computers in.
Wow.
So we turned to Amazon and worked out a deal with them and did a lot of cloud computing for this one in the last 6 months. So it was, in some ways, that just came down to horsepower.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because I know that was such a big thing with Pixar and Disney with mm-hmm. Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
When finally they had refraction and reflection mm-hmm. in animation
yeah.
in a fish tank.
Yes. Yeah.
So that was huge.
Yep. Yeah.
And a lot of people, they didn't grasp that. It's
yeah.
like, no, for technology to
yeah.
now be able to replicate
uh-huh.
the human eye.
Yeah.
And what Mother Nature does
mm-hmm.
was a big deal. And now to see it here and watching that, you know, in the water, in overhead shots,
mm-hmm.
or even somebody's leaping out of the water and you have the spray.
Yeah.
Because it comes through there as well.
Yeah, it's the same effect. It's water refracting through the spray. And it refracts the same way through big water as it does through small, like droplets,
mm-hmm.
but we perceive it differently. So you have to take that into account as well, you know. Like when you see spray or like if you look at foam close up, you can see it's a bunch of bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at it far away, it looks completely different. You know, it's got this kind of foamy feel to it. How do you handle that transition? You know, we spend a lot of time working that out because we've got big oceans. We're down here and you're seeing all this here, and then you're seeing it off in the distance, you know. And a lot of effort went into figuring that out.
You know, and in real life, it looks much cleaner and prettier far away than it does up front.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
up close in yeah. the movie, it looks beautiful
mm-hmm.
because we're on a nice, clean
exactly.
island.
Yeah.
Where they respect Mother Nature. It's not filled with debris.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now, 3D, IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
Was Jim shooting this in 3D?
Yes. Yeah, this was all shot native. Yeah.
So how does that impact your work?
In some ways, it makes it easier because Jim is thinking about the 3D as he's shooting.
Okay.
But technically, it makes things a lot harder because a lot of things, like if you've got, you know, blue screen is a good example. You shoot a character like you know, Jack for Spider on a blue screen and he's walking on a blue screen carpet. Getting those footsteps to land on, like, the floor of the jungle that he's supposed to be walking on is really difficult because you've got two things that are close but not close enough, and that's where your eye really goes. Like, everyone knows what a foot looks like on the ground. Like,
yeah.
there's no hiding that. So in 2D, you can do a lot of cheats. You can bend and paint and, you know, but in 3D, that don't work. So you have to really accurately track everything in and fit it in. So it's a lot more effort, you know, to get that stuff to all marry up properly in 3D. You've got lens distortion. You've got all kinds of weird things that are happening that you have to figure out how to get beyond,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make it work.
But
it works, you know. When you put it all together, it's got a really natural feeling.
Because I know, just like with water, when it comes to 3D, Jim is one of the leading inventors,
mm-hmm.
you know, executors
yeah.
of the process. I mean, he was a keynote speaker at NAB convention a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about 3D.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was there in the front row
mm-hmm.
listening to him as he's giving a presentation and showing off
mm-hmm.
nine different 3D cameras.
Yeah, yeah.
that he and Lightstorm had come up with.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And absolutely fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime I see something in 3D and it's like, let Jim Cameron do it. Just let Cameron do it. But yeah. I knew it had to impact your work.
It does, because you also have to think about it, you know, editorially, because you look, cuts change as you develop the movie. But, it, you know, in 3D, as you're going from shot to shot to shot, you need to make sure your eye is guided along so that you've got a not only a comfortable experience, but you're looking where you need to be looking. So in 2D, you use like depth of field and, you know, vignetting and composition to do that sort of thing. You do the same thing for a 3D film, but then you've also got depth. Like when I cut from a close-up to a wide shot, is my eye landing in the right place? Because if it's not, you're going to hate yourself at the end of 3 hours. Like your brain's going to be really unhappy with you for having put it through that. So we also have to factor that in, you know, with what we're doing. And sometimes we'll have to go back and adjust the 3D after the fact to make sure that it does flow, you know, across the sequence. Mm-hmm.
So where do you see Weta now going with technology, with everything you've now achieved with The Way of Water?
So I think we know how to do these movies now.
Maybe, yeah.
But I don't think we really figured it out till like the last 6 weeks or so. So I think we're in a pretty good place to start the next one. But there's a lot more that we can learn, a lot more we can do. Plus story, right? It's all driven by story. We're going to go new places and see new things. So we're going to have to create new techniques for you know, anything else that we haven't seen so far. And even things that we will have seen already, right? If we see water again, I think there's ways we can do it better than what we did, you know, this time. So faces, you know, I think we can get better there. So we'll just keep going.
I don't see how you're going to make water look any better than you did here.
I'll see if I can think of something.
Oh my God. I mean, Joe, it's again, this is a visual wonder. This film truly is a visual wonder.
Yeah. Well, thanks. That's nice to hear, because that's really what we want audiences to just feel immersed in it.
And for my money, we could have done away with the first part of the film in the jungle and just been in the water the whole time because it's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The colors, it's like you're looking at a National Geographic magazine with pictures of the most beautiful fish in the Great Barrier Reef and the sea life and the plants. It was all come to life, and it felt like I was there, just plopped down in the middle of it. And my eyes could not get enough.
Yep, but you needed that first part because, you know, remember at the end of the first film, like, this was what the, you know, the RDA was doing, and they got defeated and they got sent away. Then they come back with a vengeance and they just burn the jungle, you know, and just clear it. And so, like, you need to know, especially if you hadn't seen the first film, this is what might happen now to this reef if we don't stop them, you know. So you need to set up that danger.
And the whole thing, really, it's a commentary on the world today, the world that we live in, and how man is raping, plundering, and pillaging, and destroying the natural resources.
Yeah, you've got to think about the consequences. You just have to. It's like, it's the only planet we've got.
Yeah. And it really, watching this film really makes people, should make people appreciate that. That fact, as well as just, it's a sumptuous visual treat for the eyes, let me tell you.
Well, that's why it's nice to, again, take it to another world and tell these stories, you know. That's what's been great about, you know, really science fiction throughout the ages, right? You kind of look at where we are and you know, what do we need to understand better? And sometimes it's nice to take a step outside of where we are and look at it.
Yeah, I mean, this film let me breathe.
Mm-hmm.
It really did. The beauty. Even with the battles, the sea battles, the stakes are so high, but it is still the beauty that we see and experience. Mm-hmm. It lets you breathe from the world that we're in.
Yeah. Well, and like also what I was saying before with the stuff at the beginning and even the battle, it lets you not take the beauty for granted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really appreciate it. Joe, this has been so wonderful to get to talk to you in person.
I know. Finally.
Finally.
Yeah.